Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome to the Rugby Rant. I'm the big guy, Scott Ferrara, Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt. And we have, the second time here, I believe, Legion superfan Trent Adams. Trent, welcome back, buddy.
Hey, good to see you guys.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
Welcome.
Yeah, always appreciate it. You know, it's funny because me and Rob are more East Coast adjacent. You know, we always love having guys West Coast. You, Matt Cartwright, you know, when TJ Olsen come on. So it's always nice to have you guys have a presence on the Rugby Rant. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, we've got the better conference top to bottom, so it's always nice to be on here. And
I got jokes.
You East Coast guys.
Yeah, I got jokes.
He's funny.
Let me hit him with the Jacks Rangers shot. Lose another championship there, Trent. Lose another championship.
Legion got to get there. I mean, I'm excited about the new moves that are going on. Yeah. I'm very curious to see this roster.
Me too. Live. Me too. I'm right up there with you. This is episode 187, Murder, Kill, Death, Homicide. Let's go for my old school rap guys. But it's one of those days where my baby's crying. So if you hear my baby crying, I assure you my wife is not murdering my child. He's just being a dick. So thanks, Chris. Appreciate that. 15
put
months old.
Ball on his hands and tell him to shut the fuck up.
I tried that. My wife didn't like that.
It did not go over well.
Not at all. But I think it's time to get into Around the Pitch, fellas. And Trent, you're taking the first shot here.
My first shot is a shot at New Zealand rugby and South Africa rugby. And for those of you who love to watch the America's Championship, which I consider is the best annual competition, much better than the Six Nations because the teams are so evenly matched.
You did not just say that.
I did just say that. And here's my case in point. Argentina has a chance to win the rugby championship this year. So you have four teams and this team that has not historically been great now has a chance to win it. And they're rewarding them by effectively turning the rugby championship into an every other year competition because New Zealand now wants to go on regular tours to South Africa. So I think it's a real shot to both Argentina and rugby in the Americas as a whole, especially when New Zealand wants to come to the U.S. and play matches, et cetera, to see the way that they're treating both the Australian and Argentinian unions in what is Sanzar is really, really sad. So that's my take for the day and just a real, real downer for people who enjoy watching the rugby championship and also a real downer from the standpoint of having this annual competition, which has been getting more and more exciting year after year.
And I think we might see more of this where some of these championships are going to kind of not be as annual. I think World Rugby is trying to mix up some of these teams playing in different spaces to drum up that excitement for 2027 and 2031 World Cup. So I have a feeling this might be an ongoing thing there, Trent.
It's unfortunate, right? I mean, you look at what does everybody say is the best annual competition? It's the Six Nations because it happens every year.
I mean, some would say it's the Barbarians playing, you know, it depends.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I just feel like by having that regular competition that you can look at, that's something that everybody can look forward to every year. And now all of a sudden that goes away, especially when you have a team like Argentina, who's now getting very competitive in it and who's beaten Zealand now a couple times over the last few years, to now have that rug be pulled out is really unfortunate. The good news is now Argentina might be looking for some more matches to play. Maybe that means they can, you know, they can play the Uruguays of the world, the Chiles of the world, and maybe come north for a tour.
Well, and doesn't it speak to the fact that World Rugby is looking for teams like South Africa, New Zealand, Argentina to play more of a variety of teams, particularly from the Northern Hemisphere? It kind of opens up that calendar a little bit for those teams to get those experiences and have a bit more crossover from one hemisphere to the next.
I mean, I would honestly like to see them maybe, you know, do a tour in Europe, go to Georgia, play in Italy. And we know kind of what the outcome would be, but give some of those teams that are always on the cusp of the back end of the tier one and Argentina to play against, you know what I mean? Because they're always playing the same, you know, four teams in five teams in the UK. So let's mix it up a little bit.
You know? And all true, you know, with one major problem is that you have the Reg 9 window, which now encompasses US, Canada, Japan, as well as the Southern Hemisphere. You don't have that for some of those unions. So going to Georgia in September isn't going to do them a lot of good when all of their players are suiting up in the top 14. Right. So, you know, for the U.S., could it be good? Yeah. Could it be great for Uruguay, Chile? Yeah, it could be. But I just think it's unfortunate because it in many ways devalues that championship, at least in my eyes.
I hear you. Yeah. Hammer.
Well, I've got an interesting hot take and one that certainly has flown under the radar. I, of course, this weekend had the pleasure of watching the St. Louis Bombers in a D1 Midwest clash play the Chicago Lions. It was an awesome game, a nip-tuck affair throughout. It was a one-point game at the end of the day. I think it was 28-29, although I need to check that a little bit. But that's not the most important piece. The most important piece is my Rugby Rants Man of the Match Award is going to an individual, a Bomber alumni named Kurt Kinderfather, who during the match had watched the two teams play, and Bomber Greg Robinson took a shot that friendly fire, by the way, friendly fire, got a cut on his head, needed to go to the hospital to get stitches. And we know these days you could be in the ER for quite some time unless it's a life and death situation. So Kurt Kinderfather takes him to the ER. The Bombers bus had to get back to St. Louis. So Greg is stranded in Chicago. Kurt drives Greg back to St. Louis after he gets his stitches. And then this is the cherry on top. He has to drive home to Milwaukee, Wisconsin from St. Louis after having taken Greg back to his house. That, my friends, is what calls for a Rugby Rants Man of the Match. And perhaps to take it one step further, it's not funny, but it's kind of funny, Scott. Dave Fee at the match, got to talk to him a little bit. He's a good friend of the show, certainly a good mate of mine. Goes to the parking lot, and the Lions pitch isn't in a great area. Goes to the parking lot, only to discover his car is gone.
I saw that hammer on Facebook.
His car is gone. He has no car. He has a GPS attached to his car, so he finds out where it is. It's in a train yard, a huge train yard. And he calls the Chicago Coppers, and they go, yeah, not life and death, not a chance, we're getting to it, good luck. And oh, by the way, don't go in there and try to get in there, you might get shot and killed. So Dave has to call his wife, who they live in Northern Indiana. She has to come pick him up. I'm sure she was happy about that because he doesn't have a car.
Notice how the hammer didn't offer his services to drive poor Dave home.
Let me just say, I didn't know it. I'd you know, I'd left before he did, so
okay.
All right. Perhaps if he had you know, not taken that last beer or that last pudding shot that I provided, he might have been able to ask for some assistance.
Yeah, shout out to Dave. Unfortunate turn of events. Poor guy. But I did see him talk about it on Facebook, and everybody just went, oh, crap.
And, he's a good sport about it, though.
He could have
been salty as hell, but he wasn't. Hey, and
I'm sure Mrs. V was salty.
Yeah, she was.
Mrs. V was salty having to drive to pick him up, you know?
Even funnier, the first time ever I've driven on the lot of the Lions pitch and had to pay $5 to park, and then I said to V, that's what you get when you pay for $5 security, buddy.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. That's all right. I don't know how I'm going to top it, but I'm actually going to talk about an interesting test match that's going to be taking place on Saturday, the 28th. It is Puerto Rico taking on the British Virgin Islands down in San Juan in Puerto Rico. And it just is interesting to me. I believe Puerto Rico is not a member of World Rugby and, you know, not a member of RAN, and British Virgin Islands is an associate member of World Rugby and a full member of RAN. And I think this is part of World Rugby's attempt. You know, they have been talking about this for quite a few years to get some of those nations that are not historically rugby playing nations, you know, the tier threes, tier fours, the really lower levels, to start to get them playing on a more competitive level. And I think this is one of those scheduling test matches that's getting, you know, British Virgin Islands should be winning this match outright. You know, they play the likes of Dominican Republic and Turks and Caicos and stuff like that. You know, so they're kind of at a certain level, but to start to bring the Puerto Rican team up to that World Rugby level, where they can start playing a little more competitively. And you really like to see it because, again, it's a match that doesn't necessarily happen because of where Puerto Rico rugby is right now, but to reach out to a team like that and say, hey, we want to do a test match. Let's do it on your home turf. You know, let's get some fan involvement at the pitch and try and bring some of these nations up. And, you know, these are the types of things we like to see, guys, right? We like to see, you know, we talk about the big teams, right? Trent talked about the South Africa, New Zealand, Argentina, and Australia. But, you know, I think we also have to talk about some of the little teams sometimes and say, what are we doing to help them? You know, it's not always about tier ones and tier twos and the commercial side of making the money is much as it is helping some of these nations that don't, you know, growing the game that way and getting guys who are, you know, who might be, you know, of Puerto Rican descent, you know, getting on their national team to play. So I found it interesting. Another thing that's interesting, we lost to Tonga. We played Tonga in for a third place match in the Pacific Nations Cup. Samoa. I'm baby brain. Trust me.
You got that kid crying behind you, Scott. We're here to pick you up today. That's what we're here for.
He's biting the crib, so now he's covered in paint chips. It's luckily non-toxic paint, but I've had to line all the ends, you know, all the ridges with this plastic rubber thing, and he still ends up, now he's getting in between the slats like a beaver, and it's making me crazy. Anyway, I'm sorry. We lost to Samoa for the third place game. We coming in fourth place in the Pacific Nations Cup in a tight match. Samoa taking the win on a late try, but that's what we're going to talk about in our rant. So we'll be back in about a minute. And funny enough, there's David Fee, the first guy that shows up on that little graphic. I kind of forgot about that.
Poor Dave.
But we're going to be talking about this, the third place match, and just the overall, our thoughts overall on the tournament. We played Samoa in Osaka. It was like, it was like 5 p.m. there, but 3 a.m. here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I was not staying up for that one, fellas. Obviously, I caught a replay because, listen, you know, the 7 a.m. is not too bad. I'm up, you know, I'm up for it. But the 3 a.m. is a little. Now, Trent, 3 a.m., it was 3 a.m. Eastern, so midnight Pacific.
I was sitting in a hotel in the Upper West Side on the end of my Friday evening, which you can imagine was a little bit on the late side. And I got a chance to watch the first half and did not stay awake for the second half. So yeah. I didn't get to watch the full game replay until my plane flight home. But It was, you know, I was honestly quite surprised at the result after watching the first half. I thought they played really well. Mm-hmm. That the U.S. looked like it was in control. And that's the first time since the Canada game where they looked in control of the match. But after rewatching it, you could see that really went away the second half. And, you know, they looked tired at the end of that game. I thought there were guys there who were kind of ready to get on the plane and head home. And so it'll just be interesting to see, as this competition evolves, how will the U.S. react? Because you look back to what they did in the 2016 ARC, you had a lot of uncapped guys coming together, team with a lot of guys with low caps. You had, you know, effectively a newer coaching staff, John Mitchell back then. Now Scott's got his staff. And I think what'll be interesting to see is next year's being in the U.S. How does the U.S. roster turn over? From now until then, I think we found some areas that there are some holes that we'll talk about here. We found some gems, some guys who could really, you know, who have looked good and now are looking really, really good. And so I think there's really good things that come out of it. And that's where I love the fact that we have a regular competition again. I think this is exactly what the USA needs. And you look back, one of the most successful stretches was that 16-19 stretch, right? There was just some fabulous results by the USA over that stretch, including the win over Scotland. And then you go to that next World Cup stretch, and it was awful because there was COVID and no matches. And now we're back into where we're getting regular game time. And that's what the Eagles need to be able to compete at a higher level. So I'm very excited to see where we are at 1 year from now and what we're talking about 1 year from now. I'm hoping it's not a good place.
Yeah, you talk about that second half, and you can kind of tell they were sluggish. Another humid game in Japan. The humidity was 95% last week, and it was in the lower 90s this week. And, you know, I know Chris Mattina was like, you know, to get back to New York and his family, I think it was like 28 hours of total travel time. That doesn't include crossing the international dateline and all the other stuff you have to do, you know, the transfers and this and that. So, I mean, you know, I could see where, you know, maybe not that I think guys checked out, but I think they were just kind of running on fumes at a certain point. You know, it was a little bit of a longer tour, especially for some of those guys who just came off a longer MLR season, you know, you know, Mitch, Toby coming off, you know, championship season and then kind of rolling right into camp and then going to Japan. And, you know, even by week four, are you really used to the time zone? Sometimes you are, sometimes you're not. It depends on each guy. So, I mean, I could see how, especially, you know, like that Jason Dam yellow card at the 70th minute, you know, collapsing a mall. You know, again, I don't think it was lazy as much as everybody was just tired. You know what I mean?
Was anybody else surprised that Greg Peterson came off? Because he's always been one that's talked about he loves to play the full game. So I was really surprised to see Dam stay on and Peterson come off at that juncture of the game.
You know, I don't know if I was necessarily surprised, but
he had come off. Games,
yeah.
You know, I think one or two other games he had come off at about the 65th minute, 60th minute, something like that. So it kind of been the way they had rotated him in. And let's not forget, one of the reasons why I think that wasn't terrible was because they're trying to get guys caps, you know, and do you really want a guy coming in at 5 minutes left? Is that really a cap that has any value, not just to the person, but I mean, just in terms of quality minutes against an opponent. So that's why I think, you know, Scott took the liberty of doing things like that, bringing off your captain several times, is just to get guys, you know, in the rotation and keeping things fresh, because really at the end of the day, this tournament meant nothing.
Yeah, but also like it's you. In some, this is I think a thing we
things it did. I mean, it didn't. There was not a whole lot of stakes in this, I guess.
Yeah. No, you're right, but I say here's what I struggle with is again, and I'm sure you know me and Hammers talked about it the last 3 weeks. I'm sure it's a point that Trent would like to talk about. It's again, we don't have lock size locks, so putting in Helu to get minutes, yes, but maybe he could have went in for Corey Daniel because let's be honest, that's where
I mean our tight headlock situation right now. I thought Seosi Mahoney was going to be the guy. I thought he was the one that was going to come through. He's got the size. He's a physical guy, and he has just been wrecked by injuries. But I mean, you remember he played in France for a while. He was in the Pro D2 team before he came back, and I always thought that was kind of the logical fit. Boy, you look down the roster of who's available out there, and you even go ahead and look at the U20s the last couple of years. I mean, probably one of the strongest locks was the Duke kid. I think it was Henry Duke, who's a high or a collegiate football player for Virginia. So it's a problem. And I think, we had there was a young man out of Hawaii a few years ago who went to play for Life that was a big physical guy who was offered a position over in France. And, he's now nowhere. I mean, Micaiah Weinard is over with La Rochelle playing in Espoirs. That might be the fit, but man, we are just dying at that tight headlock position right now for a guy who's 6'6", 6'7", 270 pounds and can move and just punish guys in the ruck. It's tough.
And I think, again, like I don't mind Helu getting minutes, right? This is what we want. We need to bleed. We need to get some of these guys ready to get us to qualify and get us to 2027. I think we've fallen in the trap of looking to 2031 the past couple months, but let's get to 2027 as well.
Right.
Again, we got nobody. it's just crazy to me.
Well, they brought William Wegspack on tour, right? And I don't know whether he was injured, because I know he did have a meniscus injury during the tail end of the Nola Gold season. But then if that's the case, why take him? Maybe there's a bigger play for him in the fall. Where Scott has an idea of getting him worked into the fall internationals, but giving him some minutes at the tail end of those matches to again insert him into the system, give him an idea what international competition is going to be like. I would have thought there would be that play, because I agree with you, Trent. I think right now that's where we're hurting quite a bit, and I think it shows in our scrum, particularly late in matches.
Yeah, I think that's, you look at the scrum situation and wherever Peterson's at, it seems to be okay. And the other side is just not getting it done. I think the props have to be called out a little bit there as well, because they also have a responsibility to, kind of control the situation a little bit better if they can. I mean, if you know you've got a weaker scrummaging lock behind you, you've got to do certain things or position yourself or take your arm and change your bind accordingly. And I know it's hard to do at the internet. Well, I'm sure it's hard to do at the international level, but that being said, if we don't solve this problem, I don't see the scrum getting appreciably better. Even when we do bring in, even if we do have a better prop set in there, it might not matter. Cause if you can't get the room moving you forward and keeping you stable, it's just not going to work.
Well, I think a name, a guy that was supposed to fit in there that's dropped off the USA Eagle radar is Charlie Hewitt. I mean, he was the young lock that was coming up through San Diego and New York, and he has the size. He's 6'7". He was born with that height, and he's just kind of fallen off the USAR radar for whatever reason. You hear some knocks on him about, maybe he's a little weak at the breakdown or a little weak, in his tackling. But you know what? If you have an undersized lock with Greg Peterson, and you're getting beat in the scrums, maybe you just got to train the guy up who has the size. Like, I don't, again, we don't really know, the inner workings. It's just, I just wanted to throw that name out there because, he was supposed to be one of the locks of the future, because we don't have many.
So let's get into it a little bit. I mean, we're kind of knocking on the door of where we were at in this game. let's get some hot takes. What went well? What didn't go so well? I mean, after all, it was a 5-point match, but we always seem to run pretty close to Simone. I think they've nipped us twice in the last two years. You know, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I thought the defense continues to be a real strong suit. I mean, it's a Scott Lawrence coach team. His teams are looking a lot like Atlanta, to be honest.
Yes.
It looked like Rugby ATL, unbelievable defense, and grind through the offensive side of things. I thought that part was really strong. I think the back line is very workable right now. I think we've got some good things going on. Basag is playing really well. Mm-hmm. I have Petty Moore at 12, only because he's a little bit quicker. It seems like that defense needs – it seems like we were getting attacked around the edge a little bit. He's going to be a little bit quicker to be able to cover that channel along with Bisag. I thought those parts were really good. Toby Fricker is like my love-hate relationship right now because he completely turtled in a couple tackles, but he also was doing a fabulous job under the high ball, and that's been something we struggled with. So I don't know. You know, there's – It's really tough because you feel like there's some great promise there and in the backs. So I feel overall, I feel the backs are good enough and potentially really good. Connor Mooneyham is like,
yeah, he really showed out really in the last 6 months.
He's got that jersey for as long as he wants to wear it. And I think the centers are good. And I think I thought the halfback pairings were pretty good the entire tournament. Wing, you know, we probably need a little more height, I think, at the 11 position because the amount of kicking that happens in the international game is at a different level than the club game. And, you know, I love Augsburger. I love Wilson. They're just a little bit on the short side for what I'd like to see. I'd love to see Mika Kruse slot in there. He's obviously tall. He does have a left boot, which can play to your advantage in certain ways. So I thought that was good. The back row was fine. The front five, we can talk about that.
Well, I want to just talk about the defense. I agree with you. I think there were a lot of bright spots. And one of the things I think you noticed is that our defense, we come up really hard in the middle of that defensive line and put a lot of pressure on teams. And I think, you know, against teams that have that quick recycle ball very quickly, that have typically are good handlers, that are typically good in the offload. I'm talking about teams like Fiji, teams like Japan, we're able to minimize their attack a little bit or stifle their attack. And I think that was particularly true against Fiji. And it worked pretty well against Samoa. You noticed Samoa saw that. And early on, they put on that chip and chase. And I think it was Iona who gathered his own ball, maybe.
Yeah.
And put a lot of pressure in. It's interesting. It was like a tale of two cities in that on one hand, Samoa made 412 post-contact meters. Compared to the U.S.'s, I think 220 some, right?
And most of those, most of those were literally from Pifoletti and Jamma themselves, like just those two guys. Nobody else seemed to be able to break through that initial contact.
Right. And they had 33 missed tackles of their 154 total. So on one hand, I thought their defense, you know, just the ability to make tackles was real soft. But here's what I think they did well. They recovered from those pretty well. You know, there were obviously times when Fiji and Samoa were organized in the loose play, had several offload options, and that's why they were able to score. But ultimately, there were many times when we were able to get tackles, get to the breakdown quickly, and put pressure on them. And it forced turnovers, especially inside our defensive 22. So I think there were some bright spots in there defensively too.
I mean, I think
how about offensively? I mean, because you were talking about the defense. What's your take on the offense? Because I'm not certain what the
Scott wants Butcher to come back and kick a lot of grubbers in 50-22s.
No, but seriously.
By the way, I mentioned that to him this weekend when I was at the game. He actually was at the Lions Bombers game. I talked to him. He said, Scott, bloody hell, that Scott, he's out of his mind.
He led the league 2 years in a row. We're not talking about a back. We're talking about a hooker leading the MLR 2 years in a row in 50-22s. My point being,
with a total of two.
Rob, because that's all Rob wants to talk about is that no, he had five, I think, in 2023. Okay. Yeah. But my point is that we have outlets to be creative at certain points, and we rarely use those outlets. And we always get into offensively, we always get into the same thing where we're going to work whatever the game plan is and make no fucking changes. And that's what kills us, because as soon as the plan doesn't work, we don't have anything to fall back on. I will say it again, just like I said it. Fucking forward pods 2 meters behind the gain line does us nothing.
Well, so I would say two things. Number one, and I mentioned it when we played Japan, Japan does a very nice job with that layered attack, and they're able to use the forwards to get some out the back passes and to create some odd man breaks out wide. And that's one thing I think our attacking structure lacked. But to your point, Scott, notice how at the end of that match in the last 20 minutes, we had the ball inside their 10-meter mark. We lost an opportunity to score and go ahead. And what I noticed is I paid particular attention, probably because you called my mind to it, and that we're very flat in the forwards. What happened to get a nice 7-meter run up to that ball, get it flat at the gain line, but you're already getting a full head of steam with a big guy like Jama or Pifoletti or Pono Davis or somebody like that, and they're just laying the wood to that defensive structure because they can't get off the line until the ball is actually popped out.
And you know, the other part of that is what you could do is you could set up the breakdown in a more advantageous spot to then run the play you want by doing maybe a pick and go every so often instead of losing 2 meters because Jake Turnbull was flat-footed. And again, that's not on the player. He's worried about knocking it on and losing possession, right? Sure. So he's going to be flat-footed. My point is we have to set some of these guys up to have a better offensive run based upon the skill, right? So that's the little basic part. And then more to that, you want to talk about rugby, you know, 2-on-1. Yeah. More creativity in some of the play calling we have because, you know, when the rolling maul gets stopped – you know, as it has, when we run into an opposition that can stop it, we seem to then don't know what to do.
Keep in mind, if you can make a break the gain line, you know, within that 10 to 5 meter mark and get two or three meters beyond it, look what it does to a defensive structure, right? It creates some
difficulty. Close in those A gaps, baby.
Right. It creates some difficulty getting the fold over effect. They can't get they have to go around the back end of that ruck. And now you create some more space, you know, for the backs to maneuver if you can get quick recycled ball.
I think the one thing I would like to see, and this is why I like it when Lopetti's at 12 versus Boney, is it feels like when he's sitting at 12, it brings this different dynamicism to the attack. Now, the problem is they don't go out back enough to him. I mean, he's not seeing the ball, or he wasn't in the Fiji match, he wasn't seeing the ball enough in that position. But when you did, you could see him really orchestrate the attack. Boney's a different type of player.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm very curious to see what the fall looks like, because I'm really curious what direction he's going to go. Boney is 32, I think, now. You know, he's obviously not going to be around for the 31 World Cup. You might have your center pairing already there with Bisag and Lopetti. So can you put them in there and add some dynamicism? But you're exactly right, Scott. This flat-footed, you know, flat reception of the first pod and getting the ball and basically kind of one step, drop to your knees and stick the ball back is not really doing a whole lot. The other real issue that they have, and maybe we go this direction next, is when you have – if you listen to what Scott Lawrence talks about, he talks about strike plays off of lineouts and strike plays off of scrums. When you lose – every scrum, when your scrum is on roller skates all the time, and it was a majority of the matches during this PNC, if you cannot figure that out, you now cannot run strike plays off of your scrum. So they've got some systemic problems there in the set piece that are causing issues in terms of how the attack is functioning. And I don't know what the right step is, because they've talked about running this tight five camp that they're going to do or have done, I think, a couple times already in Charlotte. And I'm not sure what they did there, but it didn't show up in the tape of the games during the PNC. And they're going to go right back into some tough competition. I mean, you look at, they played Samoa, who's 19. They played Samoa, who's 14. They're playing Portugal, who's ranked above them. They're playing Tonga, who's ranked above them. They're playing Spain, who's ranked above them. So they're not playing the guys underneath them anymore. They're playing the guys ranked above mm-hmm. them. That if you want to move up, you want to get respect, at least in the tier two level, you have to start winning some of these games.
Absolutely. And I think when you talk about what they're looking to do, I can only equate it. I think the easiest way to equate it is to American football. You know, if you want to run a passing play, you have to keep the other team honest by doing a regular run play, right? That's how you're going to set up. It seems as though we don't set ourselves up to be successful on those plays. You know what I mean? So they know we're not going to run anything creative. So they can kind of just set up their defense, whether it's, okay, we're not going to go up for the line out, and we're just going to set our maul defense because that's what USA is going to do. And even when we kind of do those pop passes out, you know, and kind of do that fake maul, it doesn't seem genuine. It seems a little herky-jerky, almost like schoolyardy, like we haven't practiced it for some reason. I don't know why we're so hesitant when we make that move. But it's not keeping the other team honest because it doesn't look fluid, you know? And I don't know how you fix that because it seems as though we're practicing it, right? I would assume we're practicing it, but for some reason we haven't hit the execution on that play. And thus it stifles us when we just do a rolling maul because they don't have to respect that pass outside.
Well, and one other thing that you look at is you have a really a good strategic kicker in Cardi. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and this goes back to the selection deal.
And Dylan Fawcett, but yes.
Yeah, and Dylan Fawcett, very good strategic kicker. Or that's always what I think about when the picture of him comes to my mind is, you know, him, Carter, Pollard, those
Wilkinson, are all, yeah, Wilkinson, players, you know. Yeah.
When you have shorter wings and, you know, and Fricker being a little bit taller, if you're mm-hmm. going to attack with the kick, right? The problem right now with that strategy would be what? You kick deep to them. You have a short wing on at the 11 position going up to try and get the ball. That's a problem because you're probably not going to win that if you're 5'8", you're Nate Augsburger, even though he can jump high. And your fullback isn't great at it. I mean, Mooneyham's really probably your best one at that. But what happens in a kick sometimes? You have a knock on. And then what do? You're stuck with the scrum. So what's going to happen? You're going to kick to them. They knock it on. You get stuck in a scrum. They win the scrum. And now you're getting sent back down the pitch. So they've got some systemic issues in there that they've got to figure out what to do. And I think the scrum is a huge issue. I cannot put in words how bad that part is and how I think it just is disrupting so many facets of the game right now. And I don't know what the solution is because mm-hmm. they, you know, I was hoping you look at somebody like Talia, who looked really good at the Legion. I mean, he played well this year. He outplayed mm-hmm. other capped Eagles and really definitely. Was the first choice loose head. And he didn't look great in his limited minutes in this game. And he came off really high the first scrum. You look, he's like 3 inches higher than I think it was Pifoletti next to him. Mm-hmm. And so you look at it and say, well, maybe he's going to get better. Maybe Davis is going to get better, but there are no other David Anous sitting out there waiting to be called up right now. So I don't know what the solution is, but if they don't figure it out, this idea of being competitive at the tier one level is just not going to work. And this, by the way, translates into the U20s. You look at that Scotland match in the U20s, they also were on roller skates. So this isn't like, this is not like, oh, this just happens to be a couple props that aren't particularly good. This is like a systemic issue that's going through the entire USA rugby landscape right now. Short of trying to get more guys over in Pro D2 and learning the dark arts of scrummaging, I don't know how they think they're going to fix this problem, but it is a significant problem and impacts other parts of the game.
And real quick, I'll let Rob talk real quick, but you talk about, we talked about changing tactics, right? So you have Nate Augsburger out on the wing. What's the likelihood of him going up and winning that high ball, right? So why are you sending him to jump for that high ball? Tell Nate, set up for the tackle. Let him get possession, hit the tackle, second guy in. Try and win the ball on a counter ruck, right? Why are you even trying to go up? Because at that point, you're wasting what you could be doing in that position because you know you're going to lose the battle going up. So you might as well time it to get a smashing hit. And we know in his little frame, Nate can smash some people if he's running full steam. So why, again, why isn't that the tactic when you know that he doesn't, he's not that 6 foot, 6'2" guy that can get up there? I don't, like, why isn't that what we're doing? Sorry, Rob.
I was going to say one of the things I think we saw in this last game is I forgot at what point it happened, and I could look back at my notes, but there was a really nice deep ball into the behind the 22. Samoa's going back to chase it, and we got great pressure by Wilson. Mm-hmm. The problem is that they're on their fullback. The problem is that their wing folded back and was able to provide an outlet pass. About a 15-meter outlet pass, and we had nobody coming up through the middle of the field to put pressure on their other ball carriers. So we easily let them out of jail, so to speak, because we didn't provide pressure throughout the whole of the field. We just provided that chase pressure, and we need to do more both so that we create that defensive pressure and keep them in their end.
I thought the cohesion from the defensive line moving up together got worse as the tournament went on. It seemed more and more fractured. I wanted to go back and rewatch more of it before this, but it seemed more fractured. So I don't know if that's a fitness issue or where that might be, Rob, or what your thoughts are on it. But I think that was something to your point about a kick chase.
Yeah, I think it's more together.
There has to be cohesion in that defensive line.
I think you hit the nail on the head in saying cohesion. I think it takes time for that to develop. If you looked at the score lines of this series, Japan, our defensive structure was pretty poor. And they found a lot, because they have such a quick back three, they were to exploit those gaps pretty effectively. Fiji's a little different animal, not saying that they're slow by any stretch of the imagination. They're just more of a physical side. And I think we were much more mindful of keeping those gaps to a minimum. The tries that they scored were scored, and one of them was scored in that fashion. The other two, I think, were scored from pick and goes and perhaps a rolling maul, if I'm not mistaken. And again, Samoa, I think we did a pretty good job minimizing those gaps, but they're not the quick, speedy back three that Japan had. And that's why I think we struggled so much against Japan as compared to the other two. And interestingly, Japan got smoked by Fiji. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was 41-17, if I'm not mistaken. So it's interesting. So gents, I guess the question becomes now, overall thoughts on the competition. We kind of talked about that early on here as we got into the meat and potatoes of this match. Trent, you talked about the importance of this competition moving forward and having this kind of quality against other tier two teams and what we're going to see here this fall. What are some other thoughts in this competition as a whole in the USA's performance?
I think for the U.S., it's a particularly good competition to be in because it forces them to do some things and play some styles that they don't see or haven't historically seen. Japan with their quick ball, you know, Fiji with their tempo and incredibly physical play, right? I mean, that was effectively a Drua team, so that was like a super rugby team that they were playing. I think that that's really good for the U.S., and I think it will help develop them. I'm really hopeful cohesion is something that I think Scott has found that now in a few of these areas. And I'm hopeful that the Eagles now keep some of this cohesion. I didn't see, there were some guys that weren't in this roster that were in the July tests. And I'm hopeful he now knows who he wants to bring in November. But then more importantly, they can't wait for next year's PNC, because next year's PNC is for all the marbles, right? That's what got everybody talking bad about the U.S. for the last 4 years was a win and a loss to Uruguay and a win and a loss to Chile. Because people forget that. People are like, oh, you guys got hammered by Chile. I'm like, no, we didn't. We beat them once. We lost them once. And it was on aggregate. So
yeah,
we get beat to them. But that cohesion has to be building now. And he needs to, whatever he has going into this November test, I'm hopeful that 70 to 80% of that roster is who we're seeing in the PNC next August. Because if it's not, we're wasting opportunities. And I'm hopeful that he has a good idea of what he saw both in the back room. He knows which guys are good for the team and which guys aren't. And as importantly, which guys can perform on the field with each other and which guys can't. And so That to me is a big thing. But this is a, I think it's a great tournament for us because it forces us to do things that the U.S. historically has not had to face in terms of the Japanese style of play, the Fijian style of play, and of course, Samoa and Tonga.
And, you know, with the scheduling in the MLRs, you know, MLR slated to start in February again. You know, we put out an article talking about universal bye week that might be going on. So that will do what? That'll give us a better outcome, hopefully, in camp to build that cohesion, you know, or to keep the cohesion going, that synergy going into the next PNC, which we know is going to be, again, for all the marbles for 2027. So I think they realized after, you know, this PNC, you know, that very quickly, the word came out through confirmed sources that, oh, MLR is going back to February, which is something we all said should happen, right? You know, we felt the international break between the playoff was a waste. Then coming into a playoff, and now you're going to have these guys go play in the PNC out of the playoff. Like it seemed a little choppy to begin with, and as you could see, I think that was the results we saw were a direct result of that. So I think going into next year, it's going to be better scheduling based upon what we know the MLR is doing.
Yeah, well, we were 1-3 overall. And again, I go back to the point I made earlier. The outcome wasn't as important for this particular PNC. The outcome for next year's PNC is an entirely different animal. That is, as I think one of you, maybe it was Scott, said for all the marbles. So I think it's real important for us to be in this comp. Year in and year out, so we can prepare. It's real important because it's allowed us to blood some new players. You know, obviously Fricker really stood out and I think demonstrated to be, at least in for as long as he wants and as long as he's able to be the number 15. It allowed us to get Bisag in there. It allowed us to get Santos a little taste, dip his toe in the water, so to speak. And then, you know, kind of get our combinations right as we head into the fall. And again, start to play some of those teams that we're going to need to beat in order to qualify for 2027. And I think that's the real key for this tournament, is to help us and prepare for the 2027 qualification process and beyond. And I say and beyond because let me throw some of this at you. In the last several World Cups, obviously 23 doesn't count. We played Tonga in 2019 in pool play. We played them in 2007 in pool play. We played Japan in 87 in pool play, 2003 in pool play, and 2015 in pool play. We played Romania in 99. We played Samoa in 2007 and 2015. So what are the chances in 2027 in pool play we're going to run up against one of these teams either in the PNC or one of those teams that we have been playing like Romania and blooding ourselves against in order to get a win and maybe make a push to get out of pool play? Pretty bloody likely. And therefore, we got to continue to be playing teams like this and winning, as Trent said earlier, so that we get that mentality that we can go beyond pool play in 2031.
Great, great take, Rob.
Absolutely. Guys, I think this one is done and dusted. The next international we're going to see is actually, I think, Saturday, right? Women, the W15s won. Yeah. We're playing the Red Roses in BC, I believe. I forget what time that kickoff is, but check your local listings. I'm sure it'll be on Rugby Pass or Flow or, you know, wherever you guys, the millions of accounts we have to create to watch our beloved teams play. But please obviously support the women in this inaugural W15s ones tournament. This is kind of what, you know, this is where we want the men to be at a certain point. But the women are there now, so let's go support them, baby.
Yeah, don't just support Elena Marv because she's the hottest thing since sliced bread and meat pies. We got to support the women's game throughout, 15s and 7s alike, right?
I got something stuck in my craw, and this isn't about Elena personally, but a lot of the outlets talked about her, you know, wanting to be back on the 15s team, you know, ahead of Rugby World Cup, and they made it seem like she's never been captain 15s before. I'm like, she's definitely been captain 15s before numerous times. So it's just the way they like wrote some of these articles were like, oh my god, she's breaking back. Olaf Kelter's been playing 15s and 7s for Tess Fury's played 7s and 15s. They've all played most of Eagles have played on both teams at some point. So it's not like this big crossover. Oh my God. You know, it's, I'm glad
more she wants in the women's game. Certainly.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm glad she put it out there. I want to make the 15s team for the World Cup, you know, put some fire in there. And I always feel like, you know, in hockey, right. You're always telling your guys, I can always send you down to the AHL and all of a sudden that fires them up. Well, guess what? Alona wants to come in and take somebody's current spot. So maybe that'll push, you know, the women that she's looking their spots to take to, you know, jump and play a little better. It's healthy competition within the women's Eagles. That's a great thing. Guys,
women, hold on. Speaking of women, folks, come back next week and the week after, because we're going to have some new RPKs coming your way. We're going to have Dr. Jessica Hammond Graff from the WEP, and I'm going to have none other than rookie from the Miami Sharks, Ricky Rose, joining us. I'm looking forward to that. So come back and check out the Rugby Rant and our RPKs, because we're going to have some hot takes coming up here in this fall.
Yep, therugbyrant.com for all your blogging needs. We have blogs coming out at least twice, three times a week, plus the Rugby 101s that have been coming out. We have a Reddit now, because I don't know why we never did, but now we do. Not that there's anything on it, but fuck it. And then we're putting our back catalog on YouTube. All of our seasons we have and all of our RPKs slowly but surely are making their way on YouTube. So go check out RPKs
from the treasure chest, Scott. I mean,
yeah.
These are some of you have heard, gotten little tastes of perhaps a morsel, if you will, but there is more to come if you dig deep into the treasure chest.
Guys, let me just give you this list real quick. Yeah. So I did a list of all the RPKs. So 2020, Bill Webb, Tony Ridnell, Chad Goff, Tom Wuching, Wes White, Chris Shade, Cam Kilgore, Stephen Hoyles, Nate Osberger, Tim Falcon, Pete Steinberg, Tony Lamborn, Tess Fury, Alex Magleby, Sophie DeGoody, Robbie Petzer, Mikey Taylor, Lerone White, Scott Green, Jonas Petrikopoulos, Kate Zachary. We had a double episode with Jamie Cudmore and David Fee at USA Rugby versus Rugby Canada. And
back rounding off first cap for the respective countries right there.
Mm-hmm. And rounding off Robber MSQ in 2020. So all those things are going to be up on our YouTube channel at some point. It'll be a good thing. So guys, thanks again for Trent coming on second time. I'm sure we'll have you more often than not.
I'm actually on three.
Three. I can see that's the one thing I don't have is like a count, because we rotate so many friggin' guys. Like, I mean, and then if you counted, like, you know, we've had Rick Collins on where he's doing watch parties for the draft and he kind of bumps it. Like, so yeah, keep your own count, guests, because I'm not keeping counts of appearances and caps. All right. So number three for Trent.
What up?
Number three.
Guys, thank you very much, and we will see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.